Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to explore happiness and what it means to us as individuals and why so many of us chase it. And yet, for some reason, we never seem to find it. If you would like to support the Mosaic Life Podcast, you can do so in a number of ways, first of which is leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That goes a long way in helping others discover the podcast just like yourselves. The next best way to support the podcast, and I'm really excited to announce this, I just launched a brand new website at themosaiclifepodcast.com. And the goal of relaunching the website is to provide easy access to tools and resources offered by my guests. And I'm also going to be starting to offer written content exploring some of the methods both myself and my guests have used to demand the best for themselves. If you would like to be notified of when that content comes out, you can subscribe to the Mosaic Life Podcast Circle, which is my email list. You'll receive once or twice weekly notifications of brand new episodes, as well as written articles. Also, if you do subscribe in February, March, or April, you'll be entered to win a Mosaic Life Podcast t-shirt. And I still have a handful of the orange Breathe About It t-shirts, and of course, I have the black Do Better t-shirts available as well, both of which you can see at themosaiclifepodcast.com. My guest today is Mark Stanifer. And before we get into our conversation, I have to give a shout out to my friend Libby, who continues to refer amazing human beings to the podcast. She is the reason Stephanie Shaw and I had such a wonderful conversation, and is, of course, the reason why you're about to hear this conversation with Mark. After more than 2 decades of leadership experience in both the corporate and solopreneur space, Mark Stanifer understands the foundation for making the impact you want is learning to lead yourself well first. This learning was gained firsthand, much of it the hard way, wandering without a guide. Dare to Live Coaching exists to serve those who, as Teddy Roosevelt describes, are striving valiantly in the arena of life. Those spending themselves on a worthy cause. By showing up with their whole selves and striving to be who they were created to be, they have chosen to dare greatly. Mark is honored to work with those who are up to the challenge, those who are willing to enter the arena and dare greatly. In this conversation, Mark and I talk a lot about fear and perspective. And at one point, we dig into Mark's history and how he ended up where he is today. A lot of what he describes resonated deeply within me, and I too went through similar experiences. And at one point, as we talk about what led Mark to find the fulfillment he was looking for, he mentions that it was the drastic change and shift he'd made that allowed him to find his clarity. And as I was editing this episode, that struck a chord with me, because he goes on to mention he wouldn't recommend others follow that same path. And it made me remember that Stephanie Shaw had a similar story, as do I. I know why Mark and Stephanie wouldn't recommend making drastic change the path forward, but I can't help wondering if more often than not, a drastic change is our impetus for growth. That's something I intend to reflect upon moving forward. All that said, please welcome my guest and my new friend, Mark Stanifer.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How's your morning? How's your week? How's your year going so far?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot wrapped up in that question, but so good this morning.
Sorry to hit you with a loaded question right off the bat.
Yeah. No, it's good. Like I've been in a couple conversations recently that just They just remind me how much perspective, how much attitude is within our choice, and how influential and powerful it can be for how we see the world, how we see the things around us. And so, you know, you can choose to see the things to be grateful for and the things that are going well and are positives, or not. And the more you lean into the former, the better off things are, I think.
Absolutely. And that's an interesting word, perspective. And taking a look back, I remember at the beginning of 2020, I used to say, you know, this is going to be an amazing year. We're going to be able to look back at 2020 with 2020 vision and, you know, just look back at how much growth there was. And I think obviously everything that we went through in that year, obviously there were some horrendous things that happened to so many of us. But at the same time, we had the choice to, you know, if we weren't affected with our health, we had the choice to, you know, have a unique perspective on how we want to take this new time that we've been given and grow. And so I'm just curious, you know, what your perspective looking back over the last year has been.
Yeah, it's a good question, Trey. I remember as well a year ago at this time, just thinking about all the different ways to play off of 2020.
Yeah.
And especially in the work that I do and the timing of the year, like January tends to be the year or the month where there's optimism, there's anticipation, there's excitement, you know, even if it's just the psychological and nothing experiential has changed, there's that momentum that happens when you roll into the year. And it was not but a few months in, obviously, and things got completely derailed by forces and influences out of our control.
Right.
And I remember early on in the initial wave of shutdown, at least here in this country, a friend of mine challenged me with a thought that he had heard from somebody on a podcast that he was following. And the thought was this: what can you do now so that 12 months from now, you can look back and see that this period was a significantly beneficial period in your life, in your development. The guy said it much more eloquently than I just did. But essentially, the challenge was, what can you be doing now so that 12 months from now, you'll see this, it wasn't just wasted.
Absolutely.
This was actually a beneficial time. And, you know, in the midst of it, not knowing when we might emerge from the fog of confusion and unknown and shutdown and all of that.
Yeah.
And honestly, some of that is still remaining, right? There's still a lot of unknowns and a lot of uncertainty. But in the midst of that initial round, it for me, it was a perspective shaper.
Yeah.
Such that I was challenged to be thinking about, okay, what can I really do? What can I control? What are the things that I can make happen in the midst of all of this uncertainty to really move the ball forward? And, you know, that moving the ball forward, that reference can be applied in many different things, kind of getting to what does success look like, not just professional or, you know, your sales goals or whatever, but like just in general, moving the ball forward, how could this be a time? And it's interesting that you start there today, or the, at least that we get to this question, because it hasn't quite been a year since that challenge was given to me. And yet, when I look back on 2020 and see the things that I was able to accomplish in the midst of everything that was going on, I can look back and think, okay, yeah, it was a productive year for me and who I want to be and for the things that I'm about.
Absolutely.
It wasn't wasted time. And there was progress, there was growth, even in the midst of all of the adversity. And so, you know, when you ask me what was 2020 like, or when I look back on it, that's what comes to mind, like that initial perspective shift and setter for me, I think had a lot to do with how things really played out.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I like what you said. Yeah, you asked yourself the question, what can you do now? And I was just having a conversation yesterday, and this seems so obvious, and I probably personally should have drawn this parallel a long time ago. But, you know, when it comes to what you want to accomplish in the future, you need to you're literally planting seeds. You can't place a seed in the dirt and expect for it to fruit in 5 minutes. That's just not how it works. And so you need to actually do the hard work, even with very little surface results in the very beginning. So down the line, you can actually have, you know, fruits for your labor, and you can look back on that work that you put in in the past, in retrospect, hindsight being 2020, and you can know how much you actually accomplished.
Yeah, that message, while rings true, I think is often more more desirable in others than in ourselves, right? Like I'm listening to you say that, planting seeds and doing the hard work, right. And it doesn't always feel like, I guess I'll say this for me, it doesn't always feel to me like that's what I want to be doing, even though I know that's true.
Yeah.
And the more laps around the sun I get in my life, the more experience, the more wisdom tells me that that's how it's supposed to work. That's how it does work. And when we cooperate with that, then things go better rather than just trying to shortcut that process or have this expectation that the good things, the things that matter, that they happen overnight, you know, that they happen quickly. There's a friend of mine who likes to say that the process really is the shortcut.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to do an end around the process or to shortcut the journey, the process itself really is the shortcut. Yeah. And that's a good reminder to have, even in the midst, or especially in the midst of, you know, when we don't really feel like doing the hard work.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. The process is the shortcut, because my personal journey was, at least for a long time, particularly in my 20s, I always wanted to, I wanted to claim that, just for example, I was the best writer in the world when, you know, I had maybe written a few blog posts and, you know, maybe they read well, but I had this ego about me, this idea that I had written my magnum opus and, you know, the world should recognize that, when in actuality, there are people who are spending 12 hours a day, you know, writing really powerful words. I never wanted to do that work. I wanted the recognition for that work, but I never actually wanted to put in that work. And, you know, when I realized that I wasn't going to wake up one morning and just magically overnight, I was going to have everything I ever dreamt of accomplishing, you know, just land in my lap. That was a harsh awakening for me. And it was one that it was an awakening that I needed to have. And I'm glad that I did. But I never realized, you know, that the process was the shortcut, as you or your friend said. It's something that I think we all need to hear in our own way, because if it's told to us, I don't think we necessarily latch on to it or, you know, resonate with it. It's something that in a million different ways people need to hear.
You know, my journey is similar in that, you know, there was that desire, that hope for things to just go well. You know, my personality wiring is not necessarily that put your head down and drive through the wall, run through the wall type of get it done focus. But when I put my mind to something, it usually gets done. But what I've realized as I've gotten older and spent more time trying to understand things at a deeper level and really who I want to be and where I'm headed, the analogy that clicked for me was this. If I wanted to scale Everest, there's no way I can just get off my couch, get dropped right into base camp, have all of the equipment ready for me to go, throw it on my back, and just walk up the hill.
Right.
It doesn't work like that without putting in the effort to prepare and to train and to choose the gear and to fit the gear and to work within the gear and then to put the muscles and the lungs through the preparation process.
Yes.
I don't make it to the top.
Right.
Even though the desire is to be at the top, if I'm not ready for the trek, then I'm not ready for the summit. And for me, that was kind of my big aha moment or the way that I understood it illustratively or visually, using that imagery. If my goal, if my if my purpose is really to make the summit, then I have to be able to do the work ahead of time that prepares me to be ready for that ultimate summit when it happens.
Yeah.
And without putting in the work, I can't summit. I'm not ready. And, you know, like I said, that for me was what was when it really began to kind of click into place.
Yeah. That's extremely profound. And I want to repeat what you said because I really, really appreciate it. If I'm not ready for the trek, I'm not ready for the summit. And, you know, going back to something you said a little bit ago, what can I control? What is it that I can control? And, you know, that resonates with me because I over the last 4 or 5 years, I've studied Stoicism. That's become a huge part of my life. And, you know, in essence, the idea of Stoicism is the only thing that we can control is, you know, who we are, our emotions, you know, our anger, our happiness, our well-being. There are certain things in our lives that we can control, and there are other things, external influences primarily, that we cannot. So when it comes to the hard work that we want to put in, yes, that is within our control, but we also have to realize that it is going to take mental stamina and fortitude to actually get out there and go for a run when it's 32 degrees out and it's snowing, or it's sitting down at a computer and staring at a blank page, knowing that you have to create words out of nothingness. And that is extremely important to realize that you cannot, like you said, you cannot get to the summit without knowing that you have to be ready to put in the hard work to train to get there. And I love that.
Yeah. And again, that's not necessarily a popular message.
Right.
You know, right. If we were completely honest, and I will be completely honest, I don't like that message most of the time.
Yeah.
Because it requires that hard work and that discipline and that change and that pain.
Yeah.
But I think in many ways, that's really how we're wired to grow and how we're wired to operate.
Absolutely.
And anything short of that becomes just trying to end around, you know, hop over the fence when you're supposed to walk through the gate, or
right,
try to take the shortcut when really, this is going to sound cliche, I know, but it is really the journey, not just the destination.
Yeah.
And the more we can, I think, lean into that, the more I think we can experience the true fulfillment that is ours to experience.
Absolutely. You know, when you and I first spoke, you said something to me, and I imagine it has a little bit to do with what we've been talking about. You said you had a love affair with fear. And I'm wondering if you can dig into that a little bit.
So I think a lot of our journeys are influenced by our wiring. And what I mean by that is our personality, our inclination, our disposition. We're each different. We're inclined different ways. We're gifted differently. And we're challenged differently.
Right.
And knowing enough about my wiring, what I've discovered is that I have an inclination toward perfectionism. And not this illusion that I am perfect, rather this expectation that I need to be.
Right.
And I mean, the reality is perfection is just, it is an illusion. It's a myth. It doesn't exist.
Right.
But when I'm trying to be perfect, or when I'm giving in to that natural wiring, that inclination, what I find is that anything short of perfection represents this fear that something's wrong with me, this fear of failure. And so, I mean, this is just one of the ways that fear has played out in my own life. But like, if I can't do it right, if I can't do it perfect, then I will, if I let my natural inclination go,
yeah,
I will not attempt it at all. I will hold back until I feel like it's within my power to do it perfectly, because I don't want to fail.
Right.
It's this association that failure becomes a part of my identity rather than just an event that didn't happen the way I thought it would. And so I wanted to avoid that. And I also was just afraid of the unknown, afraid of taking a risk, afraid of making mistakes. Again, back to that relationship with perfectionism. And so fear kept me rather bottled up. You could picture the patient that's in the straitjacket, you know, with no room to really move. And there's a familiarity there. And in an odd way, there's a comfort being all bottled up and self-contained. But it really was just succumbing to fear.
Yeah.
And the older I get, I've said that a couple of times, the older I get, the more I realize just how much of our decisions are influenced by fear, not just me, but fear of what other people will think, fear right. of if I get it wrong, fear of the consequences of making a mistake. And fear can be an effective motivator.
Yeah.
It can be an effective controller, but there's a better way. And there's a much better experience to find in freedom. And acknowledging fear, I may have said this when we were talking before, but my goal isn't today, it isn't to be fearless. I think that probably is not possible.
Right.
But what I want to do is not be controlled by my fear anymore, to acknowledge it, to recognize it, and then put it in its place. And demonstrate, exercise courage to move on. Whether that's in like a professional pursuit or a personal pursuit or as a husband at home or as a father at home, whatever it is, I've had enough, like I said before, enough long love affair with fear that I'm ready to put that behind and acknowledge the fear. Don't try to ignore it, but acknowledge it and yet say, you know, you don't have control over me the way you used to. This is what I'm going to do. Back to your stoicism practice, right? Like fear is an emotion.
Right.
And rather than denying the emotion exists, just acknowledge it, recognize Absolutely. It, and try to get to the underlying source of that emotion. So that I can learn and grow and move past it rather than for so many years just being stuck in the power and the grip of fear.
Yeah. You know, the more of these amazing conversations I have the opportunity to have, the more this message resonates with me. Some of the most intelligent and emotionally intelligent individuals I've spoken with are able to recognize their emotions and see them objectively, not subjectively, not to judge them, to recognize them, to say, hey, I understand that I'm scared of this. Instead of letting that fear resonate throughout my body and inhibit me from taking action, I can look at its source. I can say, hey, I'm scared of starting this project because I'm afraid it's going to be hard or it's not going to be perfect. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes that I heard a few years ago, and it's not exactly profound, but perfect is the enemy of done, which is, it's very true. I mean, if you want something to be perfect, it's never going to be done. And I'm sure we've all been trapped in that cyclical, you know, work, try to get it to a point where, you know, the agent or the publisher or your audience is going to think this is absolute perfection. But the truth of the matter is we're all so different that nobody's ever going to perceive something as perfect. Well, one person may, but a thousand other people may not. And I think that's, like you said, perfect doesn't exist. And I think to that very point, you know, perfection is subjective. And it's just nobody's ever going to see something that you've done as perfect aside from yourself.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say perfect is the enemy of good. That one I've heard before. I hadn't heard perfect is the enemy of done. I like that. You're right. It does get in the way. It does prevent us from from accomplishing. Yeah. As you were talking, the mantra of Seth Godin was coming to mind about get it to a point where it's good enough,
yeah.
not like shoddy work, but right. it's good enough to ship and then ship it. And then continue to ship the product, if you will, you know, whatever that product. He talks obviously in the marketing and the business space. But if you're going for perfection, it'll never be done, and it will never be shipped.
Yeah, I mean the whole Silicon Valley. I mean, with you know Seth and that whole industry is you know the MVP, the minimum viable product. What can you yep. ship so that you're able to attain customers and continue building value on top of the product that already exists?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And it applies beyond just the producing space or just the creative or creator space.
Right.
I think we're all, in our own way, we're all creative, and we can bring creative energy to our pursuits, but only if we're willing to move past the fear, again, of what other people will think, how I'll be perceived, what if this is not perfect, on and on and right. on. And, you know, it continues to be an evolving journey for me. But when I look back, you know, back to your question a few minutes ago, when I look back on who I used to be and who I am today, again, still the same person, but night and day at yes. the same time.
Yeah. You know, touching a little bit more on perfection, actually the kind of the opposite of that is failure. I think there's such a fear and a stigma around failure, and this is not the first time I've said this on this podcast. It's we need to, instead of bastardizing failure, for lack of a better word, or, you know, pushing it away or, you know, avoiding it at all costs, we need to embrace it so we can learn from it. So we know how to do better the next time, instead of shooting for perfection that first time or even shooting for perfection at all. I think we're brought up to be so scared of failing that I was just talking with somebody like, you know, my generation, when we grew up, we were given, you know, trophies for being in last place. And I know we're made fun of for that all of the time. And I agree. It's not a healthy way of living or growing. We need to see what we did wrong, what it is that we could do better next time. So, you know, maybe next time we don't come in last place. Maybe next time we come in second place in the baseball tournament or even first place. It's just we need to have that motivation, that driving force to help us improve upon ourselves.
I think there is a good intent often behind the drive for parents to not let their kids experience failure or yeah. adversity or challenge, or in our own lives, wanting to eliminate that, sweep that away. I think the intent can be good,
right?
But the practice can be very detrimental. And so, you know, a couple of thoughts that are rolling through my mind. First of all, just giving yourself permission to re-examine your definition and understanding of failure.
Yeah.
What does failure really mean? And for me, I had to stare at failure pretty hard and pretty head on and come to grips with failure for me was no longer setting a goal, setting a mark, and coming up short. That wasn't how I was going to choose to understand failure. Failure for me became not making the attempt,
yeah.
not getting off the couch, not shipping the product, not putting myself out there. Those were the moments that I understood to be the failure that I wanted to avoid, rather than making the effort and coming up short, which for so long I avoided
yeah.
because I felt like that failure was this, you know, like picture a sticky note with a big F on it taped to my body.
Yeah.
Like it's an identity that I was wearing. And so I had to come to grips with what failure was doing for me, or what my understanding of failure, my definition of failure was doing to me, and rethink it, redefine it. And the other thing I think that is worthy of pointing out here is how many of our organizational cultures don't allow space for failure either. Right. And by organization, think any group of people, whether that's in the home or in the place of worship or in the place of work or on the sports field, how often are we creating culture where making mistakes it's not that it's just not okay. It's like it's punished.
Yeah.
You know, like it's this evil that must be eradicated. And I'm not advocating that we should make mistakes and we should set the bar low and, you know, not try for excellence and good work. But if we're involved in cultures, if we're either promoting or surrendering to cultures that are really motivated by avoiding failure at all cost or making examples of those who do fail, then that's not healthy. No. You know, if you want to talk about toxicity, right there is toxicity. And so when you talk about failure, that's what I hear, Trey, like redefining it for self and then noticing how that plays out in the organizations that we're a part of and trying to work against that tendency.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think by avoiding that, especially within an organization, you know, not giving yourself the chance to take a risk at something new, you get stuck in a status quo and you fail to innovate, which, as we've seen so often in the past 10 years or however many, that, you know, that can be a death sentence for any large corporation or even a smaller company. And to stifle an employee's growth or somebody who's trying to innovate within your own company, you're going to stifle them in the process and have high turnover because of that. And so it just becomes this toxic cycle where you as a company are not growing, and you keep bringing in and turning new employees because they're not giving a chance to grow and become better themselves.
Right. Right. Again, the motivation there is fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I make a mistake, if I quote unquote fail, then I will experience negative consequences. So I'm just gonna yeah. as the commercial says, stay in your lane, bro. Right. I'm gonna stay in my lane. I'm gonna do my thing. I'm gonna keep my head down. And there's all kinds of ripple effects, negative ripple effects there. But it's just this culture that is fear based to motivate people. Yeah. And you know, when that happens, it's just, it doesn't have to be that way. It can be better if we're willing to come to grips with our understanding of these emotions or these ways that we use to drive ourselves or drive others.
Absolutely. What has been your personal journey through understanding fear and failure and, you know, growth within your own industry and, you know, growth into starting your own business? What have some of the hurdles been that you've had to get through, both in your own mind as well as, you know, externally through the work that you've done?
Yeah, good question. So I can look back on my life and see a couple of moments where I made big moves. At least at the time, they were big. You know, with perspective, things might look a little bit smaller, right. But in the moment, they were pretty significant moves. And so there was a pattern for me of making courageous acts to go in a different direction, or even in little things, exhibiting courage to do things different, to go against the cultural grain or the establishment, if you will.
Right.
But what happened along the way was just getting into a rhythm of this is what I do, this is what I do, this is what I do. And I often have described it like a satellite that's in orbit. You know, I got launched, particularly from a professional space, I got launched into an industry, into a role, into a sector And I was just orbiting. I was orbiting and orbiting and orbiting. And I didn't always like the orbit. I didn't always like where I was, but I was afraid of hitting that thruster and going in a different direction.
Right.
And I was unsure of which direction to go. And so it was just easier for me to keep doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
Until it wasn't. And there were a lot of external pressures that I was facing in the role that I finally exited from, and not uncommon to what many people feel in the corporate space or even in their professional space. There were demands on me that I couldn't control. There were infringements on my calendar that I couldn't control. There were so many things that were out of my control and putting a ton of pressure on me. And at the same time, I wasn't controlling well those things that I could control. And so I got to a point where I was burned out. I was ground up. I was burned out. And I desperately needed a change. And again, some of it was environment and much of it was how I was handling things, how I was handling the emotions that were being stuffed down, how I was succumbing to fear of the unknown. If not this, then what do I do?
Yeah.
What is my bigger mission in life and where am I headed? So, you know, so those questions were questions that I did not take time to answer. I deferred them. I played kick the can because right. It was just easier to keep orbiting until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so finally I got to a point where I'm like, I've got to do something different. I've got to take a break from this environment to rediscover really who I am and who I want to be and where I'm going. And then begin to move in that direction. And maybe that direction at the time I was thinking, maybe this is just a break. You know, maybe it's a break from what I'm doing today and I'll come back to it. I just need an extended vacation, a sabbatical is really what I was looking for. Maybe it was just some time off and I'll come back energized. And or maybe there's a completely different direction. And so I created that sabbatical for myself in corporate America. Sabbaticals are not really recognized as an important and beneficial opportunity for right. people. And so I was fortunate enough with the decisions that we had made and our circumstances in life to be able to create a sabbatical, to take some time off. And it was exactly what I needed. It was fantastic. And in the midst of that, as I re-engaged with this question of who do I want to be when I grow up, right? That funny question that we often talk about.
Yeah.
It's when a different path started to emerge, a path that was more adventurous, but more risky, a path that was a lot more uncertain, but inviting, a path that allowed me a lot more autonomy over the things that were really of interest and desire to me. And at the same time, a ton of unknown and a ton of risk. And I remember thinking visually, I'm on the fence here. So I've made that first big decision to go in a different direction, to leave the direction that I was previously going. But then the next big decision, I'm on the fence and trying to figure out, do I fall over to one side or do I fall back and remain inside that fenced area for a little bit longer? And I was actually engaged with a coach at the time, really just a one session engagement. And in the midst of that, I just had this moment of awareness, like I got to get off the fence. I got to hop over the fence and I gotta start walking in this brand new direction.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a real pivotal moment for me. But I knew I had to do this. And again, re-examining my understanding of failure, rethinking how I'd let fear control my life, it was acknowledging there was some fear. It was acknowledging that this may completely bomb, right? Like this could be a complete and epic tailspin failure of a venture.
Yeah.
And yet I still needed to do it. I needed to go in this direction and embrace the adventure that it became. And so like that was that pivotal moment that once again, for me, it was that decision. And once that decision was made, it was like, okay, I'm going in this direction and we will figure it out as we go along. And boy, that was a number of years now. And it's been quite a bit different than I thought. And it's been very similar to what I thought. It's been a crazy adventure and I've learned a ton and I've grown a ton. And I sometimes miss some of the things about where I was before, but I have zero regrets about the trip that I'm on, the That's journey great. That I'm taking, because I know that I'm better off for it. When I have a broader definition of success, or I'm clear on what success really means for me and why I'm going in this direction, I'm better off for doing it. So that's been the journey. And I know I was kind of vague on the specifics there, and happy to go deeper if you want to probe, but that's really what this journey has been like for me, just thrusting out of orbit, being willing to go in a new direction and embracing the adventure as it unfolds.
That's amazing. It absolutely is amazing. Yes, I do want to dig deeper into that. But one thing you had said to me previously is that you can be good at something you don't like. And I love that, because I think a lot of people, perhaps yourself included, as you were sitting on that fence, you say to yourself, I could go into this unknown territory where the grass looks greener, but I don't know what to do once I get there. On this side of the fence, I know exactly what I'm doing. I may not be happy, I may not be fulfilled, but there is stability here. You're in that steady orbit. You know you're not going to lose that orbit. But when you take that leap, when you take that risk, that's where the fulfillment starts to come in. And how much did that weigh in your decision to make that change, knowing that you're good at what you're doing now, but it's not giving you the fulfillment that you want?
It was quite humbling. And I'm happy to share my story as long as people don't think that Mark is recommending you should do it this way, because I don't think I followed the path that is really the best path for people to follow. And what I mean by that is this: I completely changed gears. I went from a large corporate environment working with internal customers, supporting the business leaders in a finance capacity, helping them to see what was going on through their numbers. So I was not externally customer facing. I was working in spreadsheets and PowerPoint presentations and numbers and accounting and risk and analytics and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I left all of that behind and went in a completely different direction and started over. Now, what I've realized since then is that there's many things that have transferred, but in terms of doing something, the craft, if you will, of leadership development and coaching and training, that craft for me, I had to start over.
Yeah,
because it's not, you know, the first 20 years of my professional career were not focused on that. They were focused on something else. And because of that repetition and because of my drive and work ethic, I got to be really good at what I did, And I left it all behind and went in a completely different direction and started over. And so I don't usually recommend people do that. It's probably a better path to success or to business success, if you will, of taking that experience and turning it into something that's a little bit different or something that you can leverage. But it was quite humbling for me, and really exactly what I needed too. Yeah, it was a humbling experience to start over and to begin to build the experience, build the repetition, build up, as Malcolm Gladwell talks about, the 10,000 hours of practice and time in order to get to a place where the competence becomes unconscious.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like it just becomes second nature. And so it's been a good journey for me. It's what I needed. But it was pretty humbling to start over.
Absolutely. I imagine it was. So you mentioned you went on sabbatical. I don't know if that's, I mean, are you using that as kind of a metaphor, or were you actually, did you rip up your roots? Did you go elsewhere so you can kind of discover where it is you need to, or what it is you need to do to get to a point where you can, you know, look at your day to day and smile back looking at it in retrospect? I mean, what did that sabbatical look like for you?
So I took 3 months off, and here in Central Ohio, an ideal 3 months is June, July, and August.
Yes.
And so I took a summer off, and I went into that with some purpose and intention. The first half through mid-July, I did nothing relative to professional pursuits.
Yeah.
In fact, I was thinking about this just the other day. I had three goals. I wanted to, each day, I wanted to pray and study for an hour. I wanted to exercise for an hour, and I wanted to read for an hour. Those are my daily goals for those first 6 weeks. And I did a number of other things around the house, like projects that I wanted to do, or my wife has been the homeschool teacher and the full-time mom from the beginning. And so I wanted to re-engage and take some of those things off of her plate.
Yeah.
So that she could get a break from all the stuff that she'd been doing as well. And so that was really the goal for the first 6 weeks, just re-engage with the family and do nothing professionally. And it was fantastic. Again, I'm fortunate enough to be able to have had that experience. I know that option isn't available for many,
yeah,
but it was fantastic. And then the second half of that summer looked like pursuing ideas. Could I do this and would I like it? Could I do that and would I like it? Talking to people who are in that space, reading content, reading books, reading articles about that space. And I explored a couple different ideas for where I could go other than where I had been. And ultimately, like I was saying before, I got to that decision point where I wanted to go down this coaching and this personal development space because it was resonating with me, and because I felt like it could make such a difference in the lives of people that are willing to cooperate with the process and experience the magic that happens in those coaching moments. And so that's what emerged as the option that was most attractive, that checked the boxes for me. And that's what I began to pursue once August was over, the training and certification program and the business building process began, like that first of September. And it was definitely the best summer of my adult life, probably the best summer of my entire life. But it was fantastic. It was exactly what I needed, and it was a complete reset. And it's interesting, the feedback that I had gotten during the time too, particularly from my wife, but from others as well. I think they saw a more complete picture of who I was as a person rather than the limited energy I had outside of the work environment to give to personal pursuits or personal relationships. With that energy restored, I found creativity that I didn't know I had. I found interests that I wanted to pursue, and was able to just show up as a person in whatever role I was playing or environment I was in. I was able to show up in a way that's more authentic to who I am and who I want to be. And it was interesting to notice other people notice that. And you know, that was really the affirmation that this was the best choice for me to make. And it's going to lead to a better me and to a greater impact that I can make.
Yeah.
Than had I just stayed in orbit and not exited.
that's one of the best, most fulfilling feelings you can get, is when somebody notices positive change in you. When, you know, you think about if you were actively trying to lose weight and you're losing weight, but you're not necessarily seeing a difference because you see yourself in the mirror every day, but then someone you're close to, but you haven't seen in a little bit, says, hey, you look fantastic, or you sound fantastic, or you just seem like a different, more bright person. And that is such an incredible feeling. But to your point about your sabbatical, I relate so well to what you said about taking a summer off to, in essence, discover yourself. My first pursuit into entrepreneurship, it was a small partnership. We had started an advertising agency, and unfortunately, that partnership didn't work out. I don't hold negative feelings toward it anymore, but at the time, as you can imagine, it was detrimental. You know, what am I going to do? I've spent so much time trying to work for myself so I don't have to answer to somebody else, and now, you know, this is taken away from me. Unfortunately, like you, I had the leeway, the financial flexibility to take some time for myself and just discover what it is, what it is that's important to me. And so it was around that May, June time, and I spent a lot of time focusing on my fitness, going outside, running, mountain biking, rock climbing, and I just realized that, you know, what I want is to be able to do the things that I enjoy when I want to do them. And I can still work around that. I can still build websites in the time that it takes me to you know, in my 9 to 5, or even, you know, it's a 5 to 10 o'clock at night, whatever works for me to get the work done. That's what's important. And I still have that time and that flexibility to do the things that I enjoy. And so that's sabbatical, you know, for myself, for you. I'm not a coach, but I would have to imagine you would say that it's important for people to take time to realize what's truly important to them. I mean, how it sounds like that was just a fundamental part of your development.
The founder of the coach training program that I went through said this, and it really stuck with me. He said, I want for me and my family to build the work around our life.
Yeah.
Rather than what so many do is try to build life around their work.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm in a position where I have options and some, like you said, financial flexibility. But it's a perspective shift about what the importance of work is and the place that it takes in your life relative to other things. And I certainly don't want to imply that work isn't important. And in fact, I believe that it is. I believe that we're created to engage and create and work and build and develop. But too often we lose sight of the why. Yeah. And lose sight of the perspective and the place that work really holds. And it becomes too much of our identity. It becomes too much of our expression, and we lose sight of those things that matter in a different way, that might matter more close to home. There's a, I don't know if you've heard of this person or this book, Trey, but there's a lady by the name of Bronnie Ware, who was a palliative care nurse out of Australia. And so she was at the bedside of people as they died over and over and over. Like, she's helping them to navigate through that difficult process and that transition, that natural but difficult.
Right.
She wrote initially a blog that became a book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And I can't tell you how often I go back to what she discovered after person after person after person is talking to her through the dying process. And, you know, we don't want to think about dying. We don't want to think about the end of our lives. We want to be now, and we want to have more positive thoughts and positive feelings. But there's nothing like a brush with mortality to focus you in on what really matters. Absolutely. And what she discovered was that there were 5 themes that kept coming up over and over. And it's these regrets, this regret that I hadn't pursued the dreams and aspirations that were mine rather than what others had for me. Or the second one, which I often point to, is I wish I didn't work so hard.
Yeah.
The third one is I wish I expressed my feelings and spoke my mind. Then it's I wish I would have stayed in touch with friends. And then the last one, which will resonate with you and your audience, is I wish I had let myself be happier. Yes. Like, these are the things that people are learning on their deathbed, and by that time it's too late.
Yeah.
So to be able to capture that awareness and orient your life toward those things that really do matter today, and take advantage of the time that you're given, which, by the way, we have no guarantees right. for how much time we have, but to be able to live into that today is when you begin to experience real fulfillment. And for me, I prefer to use the term joy, like that deep abiding contentment and peace and gratefulness that transcends the circumstances. Yes. You know, when you can press into those things that do bring you that deep and abiding joy, then you can get to that deathbed whenever it happens and feel like, you know, I've minimized my regrets.
Yeah.
And yet that's it's a tough choice. It's a conscious choice. It's one that we have to intentionally make and gravitate to. I read a book. I'm jumping all over here, but you know, there's all kinds of thoughts that are firing. I read a book recently by a hip hop artist named Lecrae, one that I enjoy listening to. And he said, we don't naturally gravitate toward the things that are healthy and beneficial and good for us. And in fact, we gravitate the other way, like right. left to our own natural inertia. We gravitate toward the comfort and the convenient rather than to the growth and the better. And so anyway, I got so many words there and so many thoughts. I forget your original question.
No, that's fine.
That example of regrets that people have on their deathbed is one that I often come back to.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that after the year we had and how vulnerable we all saw that we are and how quickly life can be taken away from us. You know, we were given a lot of time last year to, you know, whether it was forced time because we were furloughed or laid off, or even just time to reflect on how important our families are, or how important, you know, our creative pursuits are. I just hope people can start to realize that time is, it's a non-renewable resource. We don't get any more of it. And we can be taken from the face of this planet at any moment. And, you know, if that day comes, I just hope that we have taken the initiative to do our very best, to demand the very best for ourselves. And that is a message I try to convey. And it's something that I try to live, you know, myself. Now I know we're coming up in an hour here, but I did want to ask one quick question, because you mentioned during your sabbatical or around that time you were working with a coach. How important was that for you in your development to get to the career where you are now?
So it was interesting, you know, as I'm exploring this field of coaching, not fully understanding what it was.
Yeah.
I had not really experienced it as a client, as a person who was being coached in this philosophy of coaching that I was pursuing. And so I'd read a book or two about it, and I talked to a coach or two about it. You know, what is it like? What do you do? Just trying to get in their space. And yet I hadn't experienced it. And so I had this opportunity to engage with a coach that I didn't know. You know, it was the first conversation that we had. I didn't know this person. He didn't know me. And yet he skillfully guided me through a conversation and listened really well. You know, looking back on it now, knowing how I engaged in that conversation and knowing what he would have been listening for and helping me to see, I was giving him all kinds of cues on where to go.
Yeah.
And as I said, when we got to the end of that call, the decision was made. Like in that 45 minute time span, I had circled around these things that were holding me back, the sense that I don't have the courage that it's going to take in order to make this decision, all these unknowns, the fear, the risk, right? All of that. We'd circled around all of that and gotten to the conclusion like, oh, this is what I need to do. And by the time I hung up, my decision was made, and within hours I was moving in that direction. And so, you know, in the coaching space, we often talk about just getting people unlocked, helping them. One of the analogies I often use is, you know, picture that four-wheel drive truck that's just been out playing in a mud bog.
Yeah.
And spinning and having a great time doing the things that a truck was designed to do, and then it gets stuck. And it needs a little tug to get out. Yeah. The truck isn't broken. Right. It's not as if it's broken down. It's just, it's mired spinning in the same tracks over and over and over. And it can't get out of that rut. And so what this coach did for me was to tie a little tow rope to my bumper and kind of nudge me in a different direction, allow me to see a different way to get unstuck. And it completely unlocked me. And it was a fantastic experience, and it showed me the power of good coaching. It showed me what can happen in the moment where the coach and the client, if you will, are cooperating together, creating space to ask and to seek answers to some challenging questions, some big questions. And then, you know, there was a moment where I was like, okay, I know exactly what I need to do, and I'm ready to do it. Thanks, coach. This has been fantastic. And boy, for me, it was exactly what I needed. And I've seen that in my own work too, just being able to facilitate those moments where that person awakens to, I can do something different. I can be different. I can be better. I can move in another direction. I can blaze my own trail. And boy, it's an honor for me to be able to facilitate those moments and help to get those capable and successful and driven and competent people, just help to get them unlocked and unstuck so that they can go be who they want to be and create the impact that they were created to make.
That's so incredible. I love hearing that. I love the pursuit of helping others accomplish their full potential. I think there is a lot. There are a lot of people who get stuck listening to the quote unquote guru who thinks that they have the best intention for others in mind, when in fact they're in it for themselves. But when you get people who are so passionate, they thrive when they see others succeed like yourself. That is so incredibly important. So for that, I thank you for your work, and I'm so extremely grateful for you taking the time to spend with me today and just talking about that, because I love sharing that message with other people.
Yeah, well, it's my pleasure. And I enjoy sharing my story because I feel like there's someone out there that is living a similar experience and can benefit from hearing someone else talk about it, you know, and to normalize it by putting words to it.
Yeah.
And then to invite people to pursue a different way, to ask those questions that they've been avoiding, to take the risk that they've been afraid to take, you know, and again, with the intent that by that person becoming more who they were created to be, they can make the impact that they were created to be, not just so that they can be selfish and just consume, but right, so that they can give and serve and bless others with the person that they are, that they're becoming. Absolutely. So anyway, not to get all preachy there, but it is a pleasure. I've enjoyed this conversation, and you know, I certainly appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, in the interest of your own self-growth, and I know that's something that's important to you, I always like to ask the question, you know, if there happened to be somebody listening across the country or even, you know, right here in Central Ohio who resonates with this message, what are you looking for? You know, what resources are you looking for to continue growing? And perhaps there's somebody who may be listening who says, hey, I can lend that resource. I can help Mark continue on his own path, his own journey. If there were a resource that you need to continue your growth, what would it be?
So I am a reader. I like to read, and I do more reading than listening.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly looking for that book that's just going to challenge my perspective.
Yes.
And either present it in a different way than I had read before, or help me to connect the dots between something that I'd previously learned and this, maybe in different language, different words, different framework or whatever. So, you know, knowing what we've been talking about and knowing that there are lots and lots of good books out there, I would love some book suggestions just to help keep me going on my own journey.
Excellent. That's a great answer. I too am a big reader, and that I love the idea of reading something so it challenges you and so it helps you continue growing and so it changed your life. And that is the reason why I ask this next question. There was a book in my past that I read called Ego is the Enemy that it completely turned my life upside down and it got me to a point where I can actually pursue and accomplish the things that I wanted to. And so I'm always curious to ask, if you could pick one book that has just shifted your whole perception or just changed your life for the better, what would it be and why was that?
Just one, Trey? One? You got to pin me down? Just one?
You know what? You put two in your notes, so I will. You can say two.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yes.
I'll be the exception here. So first and foremost, the Bible is my go-to text.
Yeah.
And maybe that resonates with some, maybe it doesn't, but that's the one that I continue to read over and over and over on a regular basis.
That's great.
But in addition to that, I think maybe the book that began to really unlock me in lots of different ways was Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And she's written a number of books, and this is really the primary one that I started with, and I haven't gotten to the rest of hers. But what I found in those pages was an authenticity from her own story and a vulnerability from her own story that just echoed with my own and resonated with me. And her ability to demonstrate how we avoid transparency and what she calls vulnerability, and yet how powerful it can be for us it was just amazing. And like I could go quote after quote after quote that I've tracked from this book, and I won't do that to you or to your listeners, but I highly recommend this and some of the other things that she's written about, even her TED Talk, which was a really, really good TED Talk. Like, she refers to herself as a researcher of shame.
Yeah.
And what she's found is, similar to how fear holds us back, shame holds us back. And if you're wondering what I mean by vulnerability and how that's really an act of courage and beneficial, then read her book. I won't do it justice here. But it became the inspiration for the name of my company. So she wrote Daring Greatly. It was inspired by a Teddy Roosevelt speech from back in 1910, if you can believe it. And just the impact that book had, I was reading it during my sabbatical, inspired the name of the company. Dare to Live Coaching is the name of the company. And so that one book, among so many others, but if you were to pin me down, that one book probably unlocked a lot of the growth that I've experienced over the last number of years.
That's wonderful. Brené's name comes up all of the time, and I have not yet read anything of hers. I do intend to do so. I've heard just wonderful things about it. But it's interesting you talk about shame. I've had this conversation several times. You know, you look back at a different life, Me looking back at my 20s, which I probably talk about too much, you know, I don't necessarily regret anything, but there are certainly things that I'm ashamed of. You know, there are things that I did, especially, you know, when drinking, that bring shame to me even now. And so to me, you talk about using fear as a motivator. Shame is a powerful motivator for me to not regress into the person that I was before, so I don't do the same things that I did before. So I know that I can continue building myself up instead of tearing myself down. So I really do want to read that book, because that, or just even listen to or read whatever it was she wrote about shame, because that to me, that resonates.
Yeah, I think you will find it very, very informing, probably pretty challenging.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're already in a relationship with shame, if you will, then I think she will help you to be able to reframe it, to see it in a different way, and really to move past the shackles that shame has on us.
That's great. Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so incredibly much for doing this. If people would like to reach out to you, if they would like to learn more about your work, what is the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, probably the best way is just hit my website, daretolivecoaching.com. And it's the numeral 2 rather than the word 2, daretolivecoaching.com. You can find my work. You can find some more about my story and what I've written, and certainly multiple ways to connect with me there.
Perfect. Well, again, thank you so incredibly much for doing this. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate all of the work that you're doing for others, and, you know, very much so the work that you're doing for yourself. So again, thank you. Thank you again.
That's been my pleasure, Trey. I appreciate the honor. And it's been a fantastic conversation. So thank you.
One more time, I would like to extend a huge thank you to Mark for joining me on the podcast, for sharing his story, and for challenging us to dare to live our best lives. If you would like to find out more about Mark and Dare to Live Coaching, check out daretolivecoaching.com. Again, remember, that is the number 2, not the word. If you would like more of the Mosaic Life podcast in your life, you can follow me on Instagram at Trey Kaufman, and you can check out the brand new website at themosaiclifepodcast.com, where you can sign up to join the Mosaic Life podcast circle to receive once or twice weekly notifications of brand new episodes, as well as written articles. And if you sign up in February, March, or April, you will be entered to win a Mosaic Life Podcast t-shirt. As always, I want to express extreme gratitude to you, the listener, for taking time out of your day to share it with me. It is not lost on me that this podcast would not be possible without people like yourselves who wish to do better in their own lives. And if there's anything I can do to support you, please don't hesitate to reach out. As part of the new website, I added a contact form. Just click contact in the top right-hand corner where you can reach out to me directly, and I promise you, I will get back to you as quickly as I can. Thank you all again so incredibly much, and until next time, take care, do better, and be well.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.